Blog Talk Radio.
Preacher said he died too young. Over there, throwing that gun. For Uncle Sam and our freedom. Mom and Dad in dress in black. They folded up that flag. Handed it to Dad. Started praying. Yeah.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Thursday night. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was one hell of an amen by a very special young man named Brantley Gilbert. This entire month has been our anniversary month, our first anniversary month. And that song was one of my granddaughter's favorites. Y'all know that the first show was about her and her legacy, and we did the first anniversary show on July the 5th about her. It was the day that we said goodbye to our little granddaughter, and that song was played at her service. It is also in tribute to all of our veterans and their families, because they serve when we can't. They volunteer themselves to put themselves into harm's way to keep us safe. Not only that, but they sacrifice time with their families to keep us safe. So when you see a vet or when you see a veteran's family, tell the whole family thank you, because without our military, ladies and gentlemen, we would be so vulnerable to our enemies. And yes, they are out there. I don't care what some people say. Without our military, we would not be protected. And before we get started on tonight's show with a beautiful, 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 beautiful young woman who I am proud to call a friend of mine, who I've never met in person, but I feel like I've known her all of my life. Her name is Christina Franco. She is the wife of a veteran. And I want to say thank you to Christina and her husband, Tony, for their service and their sacrifice, both of them, and to their son, because they have sacrificed a lot, and we're going to talk about that. But before that, I have to do some housekeeping. One of our sponsors, author Darren Cox, has a book out called Don't Let the Enemy Steal From You, A Crown of Thorns to a Crown of Righteousness. And what he says is, don't let any man, anything, or any situation in your life ever steal the things that God has ordained for you to have. One of the great things of my generation that I see, one of the great things that breaks my heart, is I see a generation that has no idea of the destiny and the future and the hope that God has for our generation. I look at young people with hopelessness. There's so much. We have the cars, the entertainment, the lights. We have everything the world could offer. And yet, there's never been a generation more unhappy and more depressed. Order his book, Don't Let the Enemy Steal From You, A Crown of Thorns to a Crown of Righteousness, by Darren Cox. And ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to become a sponsor of the show, please go to advertisecast.com and look up Off the Chain. My prices are reasonable, and I will take really, really good care of you. One more little piece of housekeeping. This morning when I ran the numbers, this show alone, we have reached 20,898 listeners, ladies and gentlemen. The show is technically will not be a year old until the 27th of this month, but we have already surpassed our 20,000 listener mark. And for that, I thank you humbly from the bottom of my heart, because I am not only the facilitator of this show, you, the listeners in Australia, God love you. You all are 95% of my listening base, and I so, so appreciate you. But because of you listeners and because of guests like Christina that keep coming back and bring new guests with them, this show has its own life form. And I am so honored and so humbled to be the facilitator of this train ride. So with that, and we're also at over 33,000 listeners with all the podcasts in over 70 countries, just as an aside. So with that, let's get into tonight's show, because I feel like that it is very important, whether you are service personnel, whether you are a retired service personnel, whether you know someone who is, a family member who is, whether it's in the United States of America or whether it's in England, Australia, Canada, or any of the other countries that listens to this show, you all can benefit from this show. Christina Franco is the wife of a veteran. His name is Tony, wonderful young man, who returned from war with PTSD. Tonight, we will talk about how wives of these wonderful vets also suffer from PTSD, how they cope or do not cope. And we need to learn how to support these women, because they are trying to support and help their husbands re-enter civilian life one day at a time. Christina, thank you so much, my darling friend. It has been a rough couple of weeks for you, and I appreciate so much you taking an hour and coming on the show and helping me to educate folks about post-traumatic stress disorder.
I'm glad to be here, and yeah, it has been a rough couple of weeks, and it's caused some setbacks with my husband with his PTSD, but we're working through it one day at a time. It's really all that our servicemen and women can do is take it one day at a time. Because if they try to take it too fast, then it's very overwhelming for them.
And it creates an overload in their psychic. And just for the audience, talk a little bit about what PTSD is. And ladies and gentlemen, this has been going on since wars began. It wasn't talked about during World War One, World War Two, or even Vietnam. Men just hit it. Women just hit it because it made them think they were weak. And a weak man didn't come back from being on the battlefield and break down and cry because it was overwhelming. It just wasn't done. But hopefully we have learned that that is okay. Would that be a fair statement, Christina?
It would be. Like you said, it's been around for a long time, and it's never really been talked about. It's kind of something that's always been hush hush. Oh, you don't actually have that. You know, it's all in your head. We've heard it all. But all of our servicemen and women have been going through it for generations at this point, called different things, shell shock, you know, so many different things. And I mean, it is exactly what it is, post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, and not just veterans have it. Anybody who has experienced a shocking, scary, dangerous event can have post-traumatic stress disorder. It's just very prevalent, obviously, in veterans because of what they go through, what they see, that normal civilians, we don't see those things.
And we don't want to see it.
No, I know I don't.
and they have to do things that go with – let's go out on a limb and say that most people that go into the service have a moral compass. And some of the things that they have to do in battle goes against that moral compass. So there's already a conflict within themselves of having to do things that ordinarily they would not have to do. So they're already compromising their psychic by having to do those things.
Correct. Because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, the normal man or woman out there, they follow, you know, the Bible, for example, or their religious beliefs, not necessarily Christianity, to the point where, you know, they believe a certain way, and you're raised that, you know, you're not to do certain things like
kill people.
Killing someone. I mean,
let's just call it like it is. They are called
exactly
to kill people. And while it is the enemy, it is not within their psychic to take another human life, because then they feel like they become responsible for that act, and they are responsible. But war, that's why war is hell, because they are called on to do things that cause conflict that they cannot rectify later.
Exactly. And I mean, especially with Iraq and Afghanistan, and even with Vietnam, I mean, the wars of these two generations is completely different than wars of the past, in saying
yep.
that there used to be a guideline, like you didn't have to fear walking into a village and a child pulling a gun on you. And what do you do in that instance? And unfortunately, our men and women, as far back as Vietnam, have had to deal with those situations and those reliving those memories. Of having to do things that Joe Schmo on the street here in the United States, we don't normally have to deal with that. We're not in a war situation. We're not having to worry about if the kid playing with a basketball across the street is going to turn around and kill us.
That is true.
And that's, I mean, that really, with our servicemen and women, they don't know anymore, because you don't know who the enemy is anymore. So the enemy becomes everyone who isn't like you. And it hurts their psyches so much.
And in some cases, Christina, the enemy is someone who looks like you.
Mm-hmm. In many cases, exactly.
When one of your own becomes the enemy, then who do you trust? Where do you trust? What do you do? So there's the conflict of killing the enemy, and then the conflict of wondering, okay, can I really trust the person on my right and the person on my left, these people that I trained with from boot camp that we have gone together from point A to here, can I really trust these people to have
access? Exactly. Exactly.
It's too big of a burden to bear.
It is. And unfortunately, our servicemen and women, from my experiences, And I'm no expert in it. I just live with it.
That would make you an expert.
They don't get over it.
No.
Well, I've done a lot of research on my own, but they just don't.
And let's talk about the not getting over it, because let's put this in perspective in a way that folks can understand. Ladies and gentlemen, when you lose a loved one, when a loved one dies, the life as you knew it, your normal life as you knew it, is now taking on a new dimension. When someone comes up to you and says, it's time to get over it, that is one of the most rudest, crudest statements anyone can say, because you don't get over a death. And Christina, correct me if I'm wrong. Our personnel, our service personnel, do not get over being in combat. They do not get over PTSD, because that is their new normal. They learn how to live with it.
Correct. And, I mean, they see things and images that never go away. They may not see them. When they return to civilian life, they may not see it going down the street or anything like that, but it's still in their memories. It's still in their database. Like, our brains are our database, like a computer, mm-hmm. and it's stored in there. And when your mind turns off, then all those memories start flooding back, and that's when the PTSD really shows itself as in nightmares and blackouts in so many different ways. Like, there are some veterans that can't even leave the house because they don't know if when they walk out that door if something's going to happen to them, because they didn't know when they were in a war zone, they didn't know if when they walked out of their tent or when they went off of the quote unquote safe zones, if something was going to happen to them.
And it's a conditioning, and a survival conditioning at that, that they have to learn. They learn it in their training, but once they hit that war zone, that becomes who they are.
Correct.
And they cannot,
and it never goes away.
And they can't turn it off and on like a faucet.
Because you become conditioned to a certain mindset.
Now, when, as a wife of a veteran with PTSD, when he came home, it created a different dynamic in the relationship, so that in the process of him trying to reacclimate, and ladies and gentlemen, sometimes this takes years. It doesn't happen overnight. And sometimes it never happens. And working with him to reacclimate him to some degree, to be able to be functional in civilian life, you found yourself taking on some of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder as well, because you always had to be what I call spot on. You always had to be at work. You always had to be ready.
Right. I didn't know Tony before he went into the military. I actually met him right after he was discharged, literally like 2 months after he was discharged. I've only known him as the veteran. However, when you're dating someone, you're not living with them on a daily basis. You're not right. You're seeing mostly the good, the face that they put on. It's when you fall in love with them. And I'm not saying that he was totally different when we moved in together or anything like that, but when we did move in together, that's when I began to see what being in the military and the things that he had to go through did to him, that he wasn't like maybe other guys that I had dated. There was a lot of not peaceful nights. He would get up in the middle of the night, bumps in the night hearing a bump in the night, he would jump out of bed and it would be nothing. I mean, it would just be like our neighbors dropping something in their own apartment and it just made a bump above us. And so when you're married to the veteran and they go through that paranoia, because that's basically what it is. It's kind of like a paranoia. Like they're always afraid somebody's following them, or they don't take the same route to the same place 1,000 times, even though the other route might be quicker. They'll go a different way because they don't want anybody following them, because they have that paranoia in their head from the things that happen to them.
And their training.
So when you're in that relationship and you're starting these things are happening and you're noticing it more because you're in it 24/7. It's not like a dating situation where you go home and you're not there. You're in it 24/7 when you're living with them or married to them. And you start to feel that pressure. You start to feel like when he gets up in the middle of the night, oh my God, is there something wrong? What was that bump? You know, who's it? Somebody's at the door. Who is it? You know, stuff like that. Your heart starts beating faster. You're not like before. If somebody came to the door, I would just go answer the door. Now, if who's at the door? Are they coming for whatever reason, like crazy reasons? And that to a normal citizen would be like, ha ha, that really wouldn't happen. But our soldiers, it happened all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knock on the door of the barracks and, okay, hey, we're deploying. Drop your phones in this basket. Can't tell anybody and you're gone. I mean, I've heard so many stories of different missions that some of these guys have been on, especially recently with getting together with his former Army colleagues, friends, buddies. Most of them are Rangers. They went to Ranger school, so they were doing missions where, you know, you go to work and you're like, okay, well, we got to go here now, and they don't even get a chance to call their families and tell them that they're leaving. Their families are notified by, you know,
the higher ups.
The higher ups.
Somebody.
Like, oh, yeah, by the way, we sent your husband here. He won't be back until X date, maybe, if it gets done in that point in time. And no, we can't tell you where we sent them. So I luckily didn't have to live through that, but a lot of women have, and they have that fear. My fears from that type of thing comes from living with the veteran who has that fear still, that somebody's going to come to the door and they're going to tell me that I have to leave. So that's a fear that I've taken on now, because it makes him nervous when somebody comes to the door. So now it makes me nervous when somebody comes to the door. It makes our son nervous when somebody comes to the door, because it trickles down through the family, because we all feel those stresses.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but when one has that much stress in the family dynamic, it's like a balloon that is filled with air to the point that the balloon itself keeps going and going and going and going. And finally, there is so much inner stress in that balloon that it explodes.
That's actually a really good analogy to it. It really is, because it can only be held in so long, and then there's going to be that one thing that rubs against the balloon, or a little too much air has gone into it, and it pops, and all that stress, it just seeps out. Like, you can't take it anymore. It might just be like a shout or an argument that is probably the stupidest argument on the face of the earth. Like, something that we shouldn't even have argued about, but it'll just have been like that one thing that tipped the cup enough. For example, like a cup full of water, it was that one drop that tipped the cup until it was all spilling out. And then it just, those emotions just come out because you've held them in so long, because you're always afraid to, you're afraid to say something that might upset the person. And that's on both sides. It's not just on the spouse or the veteran. It's on both sides. We may both have those strong feelings, like, okay, well, I don't want to say anything because it might upset him, but then something happens and the emotions go crazy, and then all those things spill out.
And
then
do
it becomes
you find,
a,
but I don't mean to interrupt, but do you find that once it gets to that point, that it's 10 times worse than it would have been if there had been some way to open the lines of communication in a calm, quiet manner? Because by then,
yeah,
things are not only said in anger, but things that shouldn't even be said are said. And once all those words are out, you can't bring them back.
No, you can't. And that's exactly what happens. Like, words are said. And plus, with our veterans, when they were in the military, if their job wasn't done or their buddy's job wasn't done, somebody died. Like, somebody
mm-hmm.
could have died. Like, it could have caused death. So it could be something simple as the husband, for in this example, because it could be a wife. There's female veterans and their husbands go through it as well. But so the veteran may say, "Hey, can you do the dishes?" And you say, "Sure, I'll get it done." But then you get busy and you forget, or you put it on the back burner, or you say, "Oh, I'll just get to it in the morning." But it's not just a simple, "Hey, I'm really upset at you because you didn't get those dishes done." It becomes a world-class situation, because yes, it's only dishes. It's only dishes in this instance, but in their minds, because of what they'd been through, dropping the ball by, for example, not getting the dishes done, has, in their mind, has trickled down to everything that could have happened
mm-hmm.
because this situation wasn't done. And it's not even pertaining to the dishes. It's just the dishes is what triggered that. Because, and they'll go to thinking, if so-and-so hadn't done this, then we could have all died. So if you don't get your job done, then everybody could have died. That's just the mindset where they're at, and what I see in our own home, for example.
And what happens is, and correct me if I'm wrong, But the soldier is not an island unto himself. The soldier is part of a cohesive unit that acts as one. And when one soldier in that unit, like you say, doesn't do their part of the job, it not only puts the whole unit in jeopardy, but it starts breaking down the unit to the point that they all become vulnerable. And in the veteran's mind, especially with PTSD, they have that mindset that everybody must be cohesive. And when one person breaks down that cohesiveness, the entire structure starts to crumble, and that causes a sense of helplessness.
Correct. And then when they're in civilian life, they still feel that way. That's why many of our veterans have problems keeping jobs, for example, because a civilian, if they don't do their job, they get a slap on the wrist. Mm-hmm. So when a veteran is in the workforce and the person that they work with didn't get their report done, it's just a report. It could get done tomorrow. It wasn't due until the next day, but you're relying on that report to be able to do your job, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't do your job. But then in our veterans' minds, when they experience the PTSD, that report represents so much more, and that's where they're having the problems because, it might just be the report for their civilian job, but because they, in the military, that report might have been resupplies or, mm-hmm. you know, stuff that they needed when they were in the field. And just because now they're in civilian life doesn't mean that they don't still see things as being critical and needing things done when they're supposed to be done and expecting things done when they're supposed to be done and not to be put off or for people to drop the ball and not do their jobs.
And soldiers always have a sense of urgency about them. In the field, they have to have that sense of urgency and that sense of always being, ladies and gentlemen, the word that I'm using is on point here. They always have to be on point. They're always turning their heads a 360, looking to their left, to their right, to their front, to their back, because they have their buddies on either side. They have their buddies in front. They have their buddies in the back, and they all are depending on each other, safe, alive, and on the way home. So when they try to transition into civilian life and they go to a job, the mindset of civilians is not a sense of urgency. The mindset of civilians is, I'll get to it when I get to it. Don't push me. Our veterans don't think on that plane. They are not wired that way anymore. They have been taken into the military, completely broken down and completely rewired and retaught how to survive, leaning on each other with a sense of urgency. So if you're working with a veteran and you can't understand why that veteran is standing over your shoulder saying, really, I need this report because mine is due tomorrow and I've got to get it done today. Please, ladies and gentlemen, please stop. Take a moment and say, yes, sir, I'll get it to you right now. Because that veteran is doing his best or her best to acclimate into civilian life, and we do not give them the latitude, the patience, the understanding, and the strength they need to. So in the business world, please have that sense of urgency and help our veterans acclimate. This is so, so important. Am I right, Christina?
It is, because literally when they're released from the military, they're released from the military. There's no retraining. There's no course that says that they're trained how to function in the civilian world. They're just told, here's your papers. Bye. See you later. Go
Thank
about
you for
the
your
way.
Service.
thank you for your service. Yeah, thank you for your service, but you're not needed anymore. Or thank you for your service, since you're not re-upping, goodbye. You know, I mean, that's basically what happens when they get out. There's no how to survive in the civilian world. Like, they take all these courses in the military. They take all these trainings in the military of how to survive in a war zone. But there's nothing, no training that trains them how to survive in the civilian world with people who have absolutely no sense of life or death.
That is true, because we go on about our merry way saying, oh, there's always tomorrow. Well, and that is a good point. In a soldier's mind, ladies and gentlemen, they don't think there's always tomorrow. What they think is, I've got right now.
Mm-hmm.
And tomorrow does not exist for them. Am I right?
Correct. Tomorrow is not promised. The next 20 minutes for them isn't promised. And, I mean, it's technically not promised for any of us, but even more so when you're a soldier in a war zone. It's not promised.
And so would it be safe to say that one of the ways that we can help our veterans is when they come, when they get their discharge papers and they throw their rucksack over their shoulder and they get on that plane and they've been out. They're out now. They are now not a soldier anymore. They're a civilian. Would it be a fair thing to say that if we could start somewhere, re-entry educational classes to teach them simple functions to begin with, of how to get back into civilian life, and then do continuing education to help them rewire their brains to be able to be functional civilians again, that would be the greatest gift that we could give our soldiers.
That actually probably would be. I'm not saying that it would completely cure the situation or anything like that, but if our government, even, or the VA, and not saying that they don't care, but if they cared enough, they would take these guys and they would try to, you know, work with them on those types of things. Now, they have, like, vocational rehabilitation with the VA, which is a great program. However, it only sends you to school. It helps you get a new career because you're going to school and getting education, but there's nothing in that program, because my husband went through vocational rehabilitation. There's nothing in that program that teaches you how to deal with stupid people. I'm going to be perfectly honest with it.
Oh, honey, if you find that class, will you sign me up?
I think we could all use a class on how to deal with stupid people. But
there's no cure for them. You can't even dumb them down.
But if there was something that could teach, you know, our veterans how to keep their cool, for example, in situations where people are not doing what they should do or say really horrible things, because they defend they're the guys that they serve with. That's their family. It's not just buddies, like, their family.
Mm-hmm.
They're brothers and sisters, and they have this mentality that is so different than anything that I have seen in my civilian life. And to see them together, even when they haven't seen each other for years, it's like no time has lapsed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we in civilian world, we have friends like that and so forth and whatever, but it's a different feeling, and they actually feel more at peace when they're together.
Because they understand each other.
They understand each other. When they're sitting in a restaurant, they're watching each other's backs.
Mm-hmm.
They feel comfortable sitting there talking to each other. They feel comfortable being around each other because they know that that person isn't going to drop the ball if something happened, for, you know. And it's the same with it's the same with the workplace, is when our soldiers have each other's back in the field, and when they come out of the field and they're working, then that person that they work with, they don't have their back. They'll throw them under the bus if it means
every time.
If it means that they're going to coast because they may have been the one that messed up, but they'll throw the other person under the bus, and I've seen it in my own workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And even in my own workplace, oh, I didn't do something, but hey, I'm going to let that person take the fall because they think it was their fault because they were the last person to touch it, but it was actually my fault. But I'm going to throw them under the bus and say, you know, it was them. We've all seen it in our workplaces, and if you haven't, you're really lucky. But when a veteran's in that situation, they're going to call it out, and then that can cause other issues like HR issues, and because they're not, sometimes our veterans aren't very tactful.
They didn't have to be, they were in the field.
Exactly. So they're going to say, you're a dumbass.
And they were.
But HR is going to be like, well, you can't call somebody that, so we're writing you up because you said this. So, I mean, it just becomes so hard for them. And then it actually affects the post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
The worst. It can actually make them start going down the road of being worse, because then they're like, well, I don't want to go to work today because this idiot's going to be there and I have to work with him, so I'm just going to call out. So then they don't want to leave the house because they might be seen leaving the house, and you know, they called out sick. So it actually becomes to the point where it can affect them. All these things affect their PTSD. You know, all these little things affect their PTSD. The wife saying that she'll get the dishes done and they don't get done, or saying, okay, yeah, I'll wash that outfit and it doesn't get washed, or she forgets to put it in the dryer. She washed it, she forgets to put it in the dryer, or something as simple as asking your kid to put their shoes up and the kid leaves them in the middle of the floor and the veteran trips over it, and that it upsets them because the shoes represent so many other things. It could represent a lost weapon. It could represent a landmine. It could represent anything that could have caused an issue. And then they start thinking worst case scenarios. And that is a big thing with PTSD. And that's a big thing with living with it, is you have to know when to toe the line, when mm-hmm. to walk the line as straight as possible. You have to recognize those signs of when your veteran spouse is having a bad day. You have to be able to recognize those signs. And then, of course, it puts the stress on the spouse, and the spouse starts having those stresses, and that's when it can deteriorate. So it's super important. Like, for example, when we've had a bad situation and I might say, I'm having a really, really bad day and I really don't want to talk to anybody today. And then your friend who doesn't understand says, well, if you had a bad day, just think how bad his was, because he's the veteran and he has PTSD. That is something really horrible to say to the spouse of someone with PTSD.
Absolutely.
Because if they're saying they're having a really bad day, that absolutely means that something happened. Something happened and they're not talking about it. And by telling them, that you basically told them that their feelings don't matter at all. And they do. The spouse's feelings absolutely matter because they're living with it. They're there 24/7. They're
the ones that have to pick up the pieces when the veteran is falling apart. And ladies and gentlemen, when you love someone and you see a person of literally falling apart and there's absolutely nothing you can do, watch them fall apart. If you think that is not stressful, then try it. Understand where it has come from in a big way.
Watching my husband have an episode and falling apart is probably the most stressful thing that I go through, because I need to find out what it was that caused it so we can correct it so it doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And it is mentally taxing and it's scary because sometimes they won't open up. They're used to holding in their feelings. They're used to not talking about it. They're used to the VA telling them until recently. Now the VA is a lot more open about it. They're starting to get better. But until recently, they've said, it's all in your head. Here, let me give you this medication to make you sleep.
Well, and we know it's all in, and we know it's in their head. We got to get it out of their head. Come on,
people. Exactly. And our veterans have been told for so many generations that you don't talk about it. You don't address it. You hide it. This really doesn't happen. They've been told this so much that people in the civilian world don't believe that it actually occurs. So that's why I'm so open to talking about PTSD awareness, because it is something that is happening and you may not even realize it. You may say, well, my son is a veteran and he's just fine. Do you live with
him?
How
do they know? Exactly. How do they know?
How do you really know? How do you know that at night he's not tossing and turning in turmoil all night long? How do you know that the reason why he's drinking so heavily is to self-medicate? How do you actually know that he is okay if you're not there 24/7? You don't.
Good point.
Because they're taught to hide these things. Even when they're in the military, they're trained to pass their psychological examinations.
Mm-hmm.
They're trained how to do it. Straight up how to do it. When they get out, they can pass them.
And the thing is, ladies and gentlemen, the reason they're trained to be that way is because if they're ever captured, this is how they have to behave. It has to become second nature. So once they're out of the military, there's no place for them to go to get, as I like to say, rewired, because the brain is already hotwired and hardwired to behave in that way.
Yep. And there's nothing out there there's nobody out there that says to them, the things that you did, and even if we were to say these things, they would never get over it because of their moral compasses. But there's nothing that says the things that you did were okay, because we live in a society. Yes, there's a lot of people that honor our veterans. They love our veterans. I'm going to be perfectly honest, in my state, we don't see it a lot.
And I think we see a lot of people turn their nose. You bring that up. I had that on my notes. And I just want to say to the people of West Virginia, I love you, but you better start honoring the veterans or else I'm going to send the flying monkeys. And when my friends go out to dinner or out in public with DOG, who is a savior for my Tony and my Christina, and y'all don't honor them as veterans and families of veterans, you will hear from me because this man has put his life on the line for you. I'm sorry, Christina, but I got on my soapbox. I couldn't help it.
It's okay. West Virginia was good. West Virginia was good. When we were traveling, West Virginia was good. It's Maryland.
Maryland.
We're in the state of Maryland.
Yeah. Okay.
West Virginia was awesome.
Maryland's on notice.
And when we were traveling this past week, I'm going to say the people of Tennessee, the people of Alabama, the people of the small amount of Georgia that we were in, because we were only in the tip of Georgia, the people of Tennessee, my God, the people of Tennessee were amazing. But
the people of
Western Virginia, not West Virginia, but Western Virginia.
Right.
And West Virginia, as we were traveling, I said Mississippi. That was the first state I said. Sorry.
Okay.
And Mississippi.
Tony likes interesting. Just take a moment, tell Tony I said, thank you.
Yvonne says, thank you. He shook his head and he said, you're welcome.
I love him. I love you.
But yeah, going all those southern states, because my husband wears his Ranger hat. He has a ball cap that says Ranger across it. He wears it proudly. He's proud to be a veteran. And even the people who like turn their noses up to him, he's proud to be a veteran. And we saw an outpouring of love in those southern states. Like we don't see it at home. In fact, when we're home in Maryland, we deal with going to the grocery store and people in the grocery store saying rude things like, just, you don't look disabled. Not all disabilities are visible.
And no, they're not.
There was a church. I won't say which church, but there was a church that my husband had gone to as a kid. And when he came home and he wanted to be a part of that church again, they told him he was a baby killer. And
no, they did not.
They did. They didn't want him as part of that church because
I thought
the
we
things
were beyond
that he
that.
Did in the military, you would think we are beyond that, but unfortunately we're not. And there are people in this world who look at our veterans and they have absolutely no qualms looking them in the eye and saying, you're a piece of crap because of what you did.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm putting everybody on notice. Y'all all know how I feel about our veterans. Vietnam was my war. That was my generation's war. I lived through our veterans being treated like worse than newspaper on the ground. I do not tolerate that in any shape, form, or fashion. So I am putting everybody on notice. But if you see a veteran out there, I don't care if you're from the hills of Maryland to the valleys of California. I don't care. You see a veteran, you better honor that veteran. And I don't care if his disability is not visual. If he is a veteran, he needs to be honored and he needs to be thanked for his service. And when he's with his family, they all need to be respected. And when he has his service dog, like my Tony has DOG, that service dog better be respected because DOG has saved this family's life. Has he not?
He really has. He has. We go out places. We do all kinds of stuff now, and it's awesome. It's awesome because we can be a family. It's not me taking JP somewhere or me grabbing dinner and bringing it home. It is us
going out
as a family and doing things. And my son I'm going to honestly say my son has been affected by what has gone on in the past where, you know, we don't leave the house and stuff like that. And he even gets excited. He's so excited now. He'll say, you know, I went out with my family. This was so awesome.
And it's a big deal.
It is. It's a huge deal. And he loves going out. He's like, he'll say, come on, DOG, let's put your vest on so we can go somewhere. And like, he gets so excited because now it's not just staying at home and playing games with him. It's, well, hey, let's go play games. Let's go to Chuck E. Cheese.
Now, like, guess what? You're not going to believe this, Christina. And as much as it breaks my heart to say this, we are almost out of time.
We are. I can't believe that already.
Will you come back in January or February and let's keep educating people?
Yes, absolutely. You know I'm all for it.
All right.
I'm all for it.
And ladies and gentlemen, I love Christina. I am so honored that she came on tonight because she's a marvelous, strong, strong woman. And she loves Tony. She loves her son. And she is proud of her husband, as she should be. I'm proud of him. I'm very proud of him, and I will shout it from the rooftops. And anybody that wants to get in his face and call him names, come see me, because we'll have a Come to Jesus meeting, and you won't like it, because he is to be respected, his family is to be respected. So, Christina, tell Tony I got his six.
I will.
I always have his six. So anytime people are mean to you, just let me know, and I'll take care of it. Got you back. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, a mother who is a beautiful mother, a wife, a homeschool teacher, is going to be my guest. Her name is Melissa Green. On Saturday night, author Janet Taylor Perry will be here. It's her first time on the show. And you all know, at the end of the day, when we're getting ready to close the show, I say three things. The first one is, if you want to achieve greatness, stop asking permission. You don't need anybody's permission. Number two, and tell Tony I said this, don't just feel special, be special. And Tony and Christina and BJ and DOG are all special. They are special. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having an experience with you, hey, state of Maryland, check this out. That becomes your trademark. So when you are rude and crude and socially unacceptable to one of our veterans, and they feel bad after having an experience with you, that, ladies and gentlemen, becomes your trademark. So take care of our veterans. They are a commodity that is more precious than the richest diamond in the world. Their families are far more worthy than a whole bag of the most precious rubies that are out there. Love our veterans. Love their families. Treat them with respect. And when you see a veteran with a service dog, don't tell him he's not disabled because you can't see it. Because I guarantee you, you would not want to do what that veteran has done. You would not want to see what that veteran has seen. And you would not want to live the life that that veteran chose to live to keep you free. Because freedom, ladies and gentlemen, is not free. It comes with a price. And we have lost way too many for them to be disrespected. So my beautiful friend, thank you again for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And my guest tonight is the beautiful, beautiful Christina Franco, who is the wife of one of our most precious commodities, a veteran. Until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, Christina and I wish you good evening and God bless America. Christina, hang on the line after we go dark because I'm going to tell you a few things. Okay, we're off the air, but what we say is going to show up in the archives. I did want to tell you that when we get off the phone and this thing goes up in the archives, I'm going to tag you in it. I want you to spread it everywhere.
Okay. Absolutely.
And then tomorrow morning, I will put it up on the five podcasts that we have. and I'll tag you in those too. Let's get this out to as many people. Send it to all your friends, relatives, your in-laws, your outlaws, your enemies, your acquaintances, total strangers. I don't care. And then I'll get you back. I don't have my book back here with me, but I'll go and look, and then I'll send you a date. And you and Taylor still got to come on too. So, but let's keep educating people and keep talking about this, because the more we talk about it, it's going to resonate.
I think so. I think, even though Tony doesn't like to talk about it that much, occasionally I can get him to talk about it. Like the last show that we did, he kind of like surprise showed up.
He was phenomenal.
I think that the more we talk about PTSD and our veterans and the spouses and the families, I think that it'll grow more of an awareness.
Yes.
And not just, like you said, not just in the United States, but there's so many other countries that have been involved in all of this, mm-hmm. who've had wars, who've been involved in the recent Iraq and Afghanistan situations.
And they have the same issues.
Right. They have the same issues. They're going home with the same things and the same feelings that... It's a global issue. Like if you ever get a chance, there's a book called War Poppy, and it's written by two authors, but they have it under a different pen name. I can't think of the pen name right now. But the two authors are L.T. Lovell, who is from Great Britain, and Stevie J. Cole, who's from the United States. And they wrote this about a veteran who but he's a Great Britain veteran. But it resonates so much because the things that he went through and the things that were in his head are the same things, because they didn't just interview veterans and spouses and wives and stuff for the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They did it for everywhere. Like L.T. Lovell actually interviewed me for the female side of the story, for the girlfriend or the wife. So,
I will have to read that.
It's a really good story. It's it doesn't have a traditional happily ever after, but it's definitely an incredible story that everybody needs to read, especially if they want to understand how PTSD can work in a lot of ways.
And the only way that we are going to make inroads is to bring it out of the – it's like bringing domestic abuse out of the darkness. We've got to bring those two issues out of the darkness,
mm-hmm.
and put them in the light and strip them bare and say, here it is. Now let's fix it.
Yeah. Both of them. I mean, both issues are so huge, and especially here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're huge in other countries, but especially here in the United States, both issues are so huge and they're not talked about. And you have the victims of domestic abuse suffer from PTSD also. And they're being told, we don't talk about it. You're fine. You're out of the situation now, so there's nothing for you to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have issues from it.
Oh, I still have triggers.
And then,
18 years I suffered. It never goes away.
It never goes away. So.
And so we're going to bring this out. Honey, thank you. You have such courage. And I am so proud of
you. Thank
you for inviting me. Well, I couldn't wait for this show because it's one of those things I'm passionate about. And I watch you. One day at a time, you and Tony, and I see his beautiful work, and I see the beautiful pictures of the family, and I just want, if I could get my arms around all three of you, I'd just give y'all a big hug. Because y'all have grown so special to me. And it is because that I am so proud of what Tony did voluntarily, what he put himself through, and how he has tried to make it better by being back,
mm-hmm.
and how love, which we didn't even get to, how love is the glue that holds us together. And I'm talking about pure, unconditional love is what holds us together.
Yeah. Michael's wife, last weekend at the funeral, Michael's wife, she said to the guys, "You're all heroes. You all are all heroes, and I was married to a hero." And I never really thought of it that way, but I'm married to a hero.
Yes, you are.
And his friends are heroes. And
yep.
I've always seen it that way, but I never really thought about it. And we have to keep these heroes
mm-hmm.
around. We need to know their stories. It needs to go to the next generation. There's a lot of disrespect
yep.
for military in this day and age. And these generations that are coming up need to know that it's not okay.
Exactly.
It's not okay to disrespect them. I know in Vietnam, there was so much disrespect for the guys when they were in because of everything going in. And
they wouldn't even wear the uniforms on the plane.
Yeah.
When they came home. They changed into their civilian clothes.
It's not, I don't think that it's as bad necessarily as what it was then, but it's worse than when I was a kid. When I was a kid, like, veterans were the shit. Veterans were amazing. You wanted to sit down and you wanted to talk to a veteran. Now, people they turn their noses up so much, and I see it on a daily basis in this area. I'm not saying everybody does that, because there are some amazing people in the area who really support our veterans and everything like that, but especially the younger generation.
Well, the younger generation don't even know how to get their clothes on right. I mean, come on.
That's true. But
when God handed out brains, they thought they said trains, and they said, "I don't have a ticket." So.
But yeah, so especially this younger generation, it just galls me sometimes, like, to the point where I'm just like, did I really just witness that?
Well, they have no self-respect, so if they have no self-respect, how can they respect others?
Exactly. That's true.
And they're not taught self-respect, and they're not taught respect of others within the dynamic of the home. When a five-year-old kid walks up and slaps his mother across the face and says, "I'll call defects on you if you hit me back," I'm thinking, "I brought you in this world, kid. I take you out."
Right?
And I won't make another one just like you.
I'm like, okay, I won't hit you. You're right. I won't hit you. I'll just take away everything from you. So you're just going to sit down and you're just going to not do anything.
Well, what I would tell them is, here, wait just a minute. Let me dial the phone for you. So tell me if it's any better someplace else.
That too. That's for sure.
So on that note, my darling friend, when you get off the phone, would you go give the three men in your life a hug and have the three men in your life hug you back from me, and let Tony know he is a hero. He is my hero. You are my hero. The baby is my hero. And DOG is just sent from God.
I definitely will.
Because you know DOG spelled backwards is G-O-D, right? You know that.
It is. It is.
See?
Yeah. We are quite aware of that.
And I will, as soon as I get off the phone and get back to my other desk, I'll send you a date, probably towards the last of January, first of February.
Okay. Sounds good.
And we will continue this edumacation, as they say in Georgia.
Sounds perfect.
All right, sweethearts. My love to all of y'all, and thank you again.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, baby. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.